Okay, so welcome everyone to the September 4th issue of our question and answer session. As you notice on the slide here, Chris is away right now. He's either sleeping soundly on board a cruise ship in Norway, or he's taking pictures of the Northern Lights at 2 o'clock in the morning or something. Either way, he said he wasn't going to join us. So fortunately, Bob Harris, one of the other board of directors, has stepped into the breach, and Bob will be helping me run the session tonight. We have an awful lot of material tonight, and we're not going to get through it all, I'm sure. But we'll give it a shot. I'm going to start off with a follow-up from last week. This is a follow-up from last week. Remember, Chris was talking about the proposal that we implement one-on-one assistance using remote software for our club members. And before we actually get that program going, we're looking for volunteers who can help other people. And your expertise can be very specific. You know everything there is to know about Microsoft Word or Thunderbird or something like that. Or it can be very general. You know about computer security or networking or something like that. And what we're trying to do is find out who's available and what their expertise is so that we can match the request to the people who are willing to provide assistance. So the question is, can you help? And if you can, then please send us an email to the suggestion box address and tell us which computing areas you can help other people with. Okay. So second thing, I was talking about running a large language model on a local PC using this software called Ollama. And in particular, I had this package called CodeLlama, which is Python specific. And I gave an example of how to tell the thing to write a program to find the differences in two text files. And on my laptop, it was running fairly slowly. And it also did a couple of weird things. It suggested using a Python library, but didn't give me any code to support it. And it said I could use a Linux diff command when I was clearly on a Windows system with Windows software. So I thought that was kind of odd. But Chris was curious about what kind of performance hit this was imposing on the machine. So I ran the same query again. And what you're looking at here is a time series. So early on in the series is on the left and kind of current time is on the right. So you can see this is the disk usage. Early on in the process, the disk access really spiked. So it's probably, high disk load because it's trying to find the information it wants from that 7 billion parameter model. It's like a 4 gigabyte file or something. So lots of disk activity early on, and then it kind of drops off. And the next spike might be just me trying to take screenshots. I'm not sure. But then the other thing is what happens to the CPU, and it's kind of the opposite. Early on, it's not doing very much, and then it kicks in, and you can see it kicks in big time. The bottom four windows there are my quad-core CPU, and all four cores are running essentially at 100%. And they keep running at 100%. And then eventually, once the task is nearing completion and finished, then the CPU load drops off. So you want to run a large language model locally, be prepared to use a lot of resources to do it. It basically takes over the whole machine. You might remember the first time I ran it, I got this thing. It gave me some code, which is straightforward, and that worked. But it also said I could use this difflib module to compare the files. But it didn't give me any code to run difflib. Interesting, the second time I run the same query, it actually gives me some code. And it's using this difflib sequence matcher option to try and do something. So, interesting for computers that normally you give it a command and it does the same thing. That's not necessarily true with these chatbots. And it can give you different answers the second or third time you run the same query. The other thing I found was that there's actually a more specific large language model than just Code Llama. There's this Code Llama colon Python. Code Llama itself supports Python, but it also supports some other programming languages like C++ and JavaScript and C# and that kind of stuff. Code Llama Python is more specialized, and they say it's further finely tuned on 100 billion tokens of Python code. So I ran the same command using this very Python specific large language model, and it took less than 2 minutes to generate the answer. So maybe there's hope for these things after all. And most of the information I got from these about running large language models was from Gary Explained, Gary Sims of Android Authority, and he has a YouTube channel. And this particular YouTube tech video is how to run the current version of Llama, which is a more general large language model, not Python specific, but absolutely general, on a PC and or on a Raspberry Pi 5, the newest and greatest Raspberry Pi. So that gives you some information about how to run these large language models on a local computer. And he also has another one where you can run a large language model using a single file. So you don't need to install Llama and Code Llama. You just run this one file, apparently. I haven't tried this, but if anybody wants to try it out and give us a report, we'd be glad to hear about it. Okay. So we have a couple of questions that came in recently. One is that this member who has a Samsung Galaxy Tab Pro 10.1 Android tablet. And the problem is it's run out of software updates, and it won't download stuff from the Play Store. So what he wants to do is install a custom ROM, which is essentially just a newer version of Android. But to do that, you have to unlock the bootloader. And all of the information on the web tells you to implement developer options, which is easy, and then you'll have this option, OEM unlock, or something similar. But when he does that on this tablet, then that option is not available. You can see in the screenshot there, we should have this OEM unlocking type toggle to turn on. Well, that's not available, so we can't unlock the bootloader. And the problem is, if you can't unlock the bootloader, you can't install a custom ROM. So the update process is stalled, and we want to know if there is a fix for this. So if anybody has any idea how to unlock the bootloader on a Samsung Android tablet, we'd love to hear from you. There's some information on the web, but it's basically outdated, and the software that they suggest is no longer available. So I haven't got very far with that. And that same tablet, so if you have any ideas on that, put something in the chat or send us an email and we'll sort it out. On that same tablet, when he clicks on the Gmail app, it keeps saying that it's waiting for sync. And there are no messages being downloaded. He's checked all the settings. At one point, he did get the messages, but now they've all gone away. So again, the question is, how do you get around this little option where Google says it's waiting for sync, but it never actually syncs? And I must admit, Perplexity AI let me down on this one. I asked the question, it gave some suggestions, but apparently those suggestions don't work. So this is another situation where if you have any ideas on how to get around that problem of waiting for sync, then again, we'd love to hear from you. Okay, third question that came in a while ago was a member who has a Dell laptop. It uses Intel CPU and some components. And so sometimes she's getting updates from Dell, and she downloads and installs those. And she also gets updates from Intel, so she downloads and installs those. The question is whether she should not bother with the Intel updates if she already has the ones from Dell. But in the meantime, she's doing both. And the question was, well, what do you think about that? So I put this on the members forum, and a number of people came back with suggestions. And Chris had said, maybe you should do both, because as a general rule, the updates from the laptop manufacturer, Dell, should be more complete than the ones that just come from the CPU manufacturer, Intel, but not necessarily. So he says, as a general rule, he applies the updates from both, and it's not really a problem, because if there's a more recent update for the same thing and it's already been installed, then that update will be ignored. Harvey pointed out some recommendations on the Dell site that suggest you really should only download drivers for a Dell computer or a printer or other Dell devices from the Dell website. Other third-party sources can provide problems. This is from a valued member who wishes to remain anonymous. His wife has a Dell. She gets updates from both. And basically they say, you know, Dell ensures that the system software remains current and compatible. So he guesses that Dell takes a look at what Microsoft is doing, but Microsoft is fixing Microsoft problems and Dell knows their problems. So again, he says probably best to install all the updates and see where everything lands. And then finally, Jocelyn pointed out that perhaps the updates are actually for different things. Intel is going to provide drivers for things like the CPU and the memory, if that's Intel hardware. And Dell are going to be giving you updates for everything else, like hard drive software, keyboard, sound system, and that kind of thing. But he says, you know, also manufacturers provide their drivers to Microsoft. So as the previous suggestion came in, Windows may be providing updates as well. But he notes that on top of just the drivers, there are also programs such as the printer utility, which tells you what's happening to your printer. So I think the bottom line is you probably should install everything that comes down the pipe, and it will probably take care of itself. And I see in the chat Elizabeth saying she has a Dell and she never gets any updates. I have a Dell too, and I don't, but mine's out of warranty, and I don't know whether that makes a difference. Anyway, moving along, next up we have Bob Harris, who's going to tell us all about a new AI program that he's found.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you. And Alan mentioned that large language model, running it on your own PC. A couple of videos Alan mentioned, and I think it was I had a peek at one of those. You can run, this is all new to me, but you can run one of those, a 4 gigabyte file on your own Windows PC. It looks really easy. I'm not into deep tech stuff, but I plan to try that myself. It looks doable. So tonight I'd like to show you about Ideogram 2.0 at ideogram.a. And I'm going to turn my stuff on.
I've lost my...
Okay.
Just a second here. Here we go, Bob.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
I lost my
controls for a minute.
Thank you. So this was new software released on August 21st, exactly 2 weeks ago today. I've been puttering around with this for a little over a week now, maybe 10 days. And this is pretty cool software. I try a lot of software. But let's have a look at this software and see what it has. A little quick look anyway. And next slide, please. So I do try a lot of software. And I always like to use Google to sign in. There's no passwords to remember. It's quick and easy. I wouldn't do this for my bank, but I believe Google Sign In gives me a level of integrity or almost security. It's almost to the point if I have a site that doesn't offer Google Sign In, I'm a little more cautious of those sites. It takes a certain standard to be a Google Sign In, whatever, app site or web. This is a part of the sign-in screen. I log in quickly. It takes about 5 or 6 seconds. There's no password, name to remember. You hammer right through this, and we just keep right on moving right through, right to the sign-in screen. There's a splash screen here. Now, this is more impressive than you might think. I've tried a number of these AI generation tools. So I've showed perchance to you, but I've tried too many more. And one of the things that it has big problems with is text. An ideogram can usually get accurate text in your graphic here. And it says in the fine print here that you get 10 credits per day, which is certainly true. You can get up to 40 images per day. I really haven't experienced that, but it certainly is free. One note here that whatever you generate an ideogram can be used for both personal and commercial use. Doesn't matter whether you're on the free plan or the paid plan. Whatever you make is yours. It's your responsibility to watch for copyright and other obvious things. But whatever you make is yours. And here we have the different plans. They're $7 and $16 a month. I've edited that down to about 10 images per day. It might be a little conservative, but that's certainly enough for me to have fun and try a new tool. You get 10 new credits every day. It resets at midnight Pacific time, which is about 4 a.m. Ottawa time. And here we go. And so this is the home screen or the interface screen. It looks kind of plain here, but there's a lot going on here. On the top left is the big white space. We enter our prompt there. Or description of what you want. A little farther over to the right, hard to see, there's a magic prompt button. This will automatically enhance your prompt. If anybody here used AI, they called it the AI input tool there. But it sort of cleans things up for you. The next one down on the right, as you get down there, is the aspect ratio. We have like a portrait style, a square, or a landscape. Your photographs you generate are made public. They're not private. And we're on model 2.0. Below that is the color palette. I really haven't tried that, so I can't offer you an opinion on that, and I won't. And then the bottom left, we have five categories of images you create: automatic, general, realistic, a design one, a 3D, anime. That's more of a, I guess, a gaming thing. And then over beyond that, we hit a generate button, and it'll tell you that you're going to be using or spending 2 credits for this image. There we go. So let's try something a little challenging here for ideogram. Let's try this text. This is a lot of things going on here. A tan and brown colored husky dog riding a red bicycle on a trail alongside a stream, chasing a black and white cat. And the dog's pedaling as fast as he can. His eyes are focused on the cat, and the cat's running in front of the bicycle. Let's see how this works in this one here. So we'll move ahead now. And here's our text. We put that into the description box. We have magic prompt turned on here. And we're going to ask for a landscape picture in this one here. And I think we want a real automatic one, like it is here. And we'll try next. And lo and behold, we got 4 pictures here, about 10 or 15 seconds. I thought this might give you some idea of what you can get. Now, apparently you can download each of these in a JPEG format. I'm a GreenShot lover. I use GreenShot 24 hours a day, not quite. But I have GreenShot set at 100%. I couldn't be bothered downloading it any other way. Let's walk through all these four one by one here, see them a little closer. So we have up close here, everything we asked for is in here. We have the red bicycle, the husky dog, tan, and the colors are great. Got a black and white cat here, and a stream in the forest. I think it nailed it. In this instance, the dog's doing an amazing job. He's already passed the cat. And the next slide here, And here we have number two. Now, the cat is clearly in the lead here. But in this photograph, we've still got all we wanted. We got a lush green forest. We got a red bicycle. The dog's feet and hands are doing as best he can with that. And they're all going the same direction. These are minor things, but this is pretty cool. And the next slide, please. And in this instance, the dog is more interested in winning the race than actually catching the cat. But once again, it's nailed all the items we asked for in each of these four photos. It's hard to find fault in any of these. And then the last one coming up here, we're coming across the finish line. It looks like the cat has edged out the dog by a whisker. Once again, everything we asked for is really in the photograph. The cat's no longer in the lead, but I want to assure you that no animals were harmed during this test. So, this might be a little bit more mundane, but let's try an airport. We'll throw in some text in the description. And here we have, let's view a busy, very busy airport. As viewed from the sky, there are lots of runways going different directions here. Planes on the runway ready to take off. And I see there's errors by Tim in the last one. The dog's hind leg missing. Oh, my, I missed that. Can we go back, please, Ellen? Got a missing
last,
I missed.
The last two.
The last two, missing a hind leg?
No, missing the handlebar. Go back. Go forward one.
Forward?
The handlebar on the left side of the dog is missing.
It could be behind the fork. I don't know. Behind the...
it's the next one that's disturbing.
Oh, like, you can't see the back legs.
He's been impaled by the frame.
Oh, that's true, too. Yeah, okay.
Sorry. I didn't want to talk. I just wanted to show nope. It was...
Well, he's supposed to lean forward. He's intent. Okay. Yeah.
And apparently he survived because Bob says no animals were harmed.
That's right. Good point, though. Yep, I didn't really catch that. Very good. So we're back at the airport here, putting our stuff in here. What a busy runway and lots of other planes in the runway. We wanted a control tower, and we want a very busy, sunny day, good weather. And let's see how we get here. And we have the magic prompt is going to help us out, I hope, here. And here we have, lo and behold, our magic assistant. It's amazing. I don't type very well. It cleans things up very nicely and it's ready to roll. And we'll hit the generate button. And wow, right away, it's not spectacular, but it's pretty well what we asked for. We got four photographs here. We'll run through a couple of them. And these looked pretty good to me. Before Tim gets to the next one, I mentioned Alan noticed this one and the next one here. That was not bad there. And I think Alan noted there'd be a couple of wings missing on the airplanes, whatever. These could be Boeings. There could be a bolts issue. I don't know for sure. But overall, I'm impressed. We asked for an airport high from the sky. I'm going to call this a win. And
that's really.
Let's move on to something else here. So for no reason whatsoever, let's try and generate an image of some old guy on a lawn tractor, again with two dogs, different dogs this time, nearby. And they have the dog staying away from the tractor for safety. So we'll put this into our prompt here, and we'll ask for the magic prompt to help us and go to the next slide. And lo and behold, the magic prompt has kicked in here, and we're up to get a nearly bald, red-haired guy with gold-rimmed glasses driving a Cub Cadet lawn tractor, cutting his grass in the yard. He's wearing black jeans, gray shirt, and being careful to avoid the dogs. We've got a Burmese mountain dog here with a mix and a husky German shepherd. And the dogs are, again, being careful. Let's see what we get here now. Now, Ideogram always seems to apologize for the slow waiting time. But I have no problems waiting 15 seconds. And in a second or two, it clears up. And wow, we just nailed in four images. You get four for two credits here every time. And a quick look at the four. I won't go through all these. The next one looked to be the best one, I believe, right here. It turned out pretty good. Another horse race. They're all neck and neck. Now, I did not ask for the exact spelling of the word Cub Cadet Tractor. I did not a bad job of trying it. That I own a Cub Cadet Tractor. That looks like a Cub Cadet Tractor to me. I would call that a win. The dogs are too close to the lawnmower, but that's what we asked for, though, on the grass. Let's move on again. Let's try something absolutely and totally different. Well, this is a personal photo of yours truly, as you call that a selfie, about 2 weeks ago. I was taking my granddaughter on a pirate ship adventure in Ottawa at Mooney's Bay. Now, I should mention here, this is an actual live photo. The people in there are live, but out of politeness, I blurred the faces so you can't recognize anybody else but the pirate in the front. So the pirate ship no longer sailing on Mooney's Bay. But if you want to get your own selfies for this, you'll have to use Ideogram. And we're going to see how to use Ideogram to get a picture of this graphic here. So we just throw our description into here. And here, I'll catch up there in here. And my amazing technical skill, it's in here. We've asked for a magic prompt to be turned on. And we threw our text. It's important here to put lots of context. But whatever you see in the description, the pirate ship, you got to describe that. And then magic prompt will take over. We're going to ask for a landscape photo here. And once again, it says that this is public, meaning that other Ideogram users can see my stuff, but I'm fine with that. We're on model 2.0, the latest one. And on the left side bottom, we're asking for a realistic picture. And we're going to hit the generate button. It's going to cost us, and once again, two credits. We're going to get four images here. And we'll see how this runs out here. First of all, the magic prompt has really cleaned up our terrible typing here. We're going to get a lively photo on the desk, on the pirate ship here. Some guy with a blue bandana. And people in the ship at various activities. And so anyway, the prompt's generating here now. And we'll see. There we go. We're already there. You guys are ahead of me. That's good. Okay, in less than 15 seconds, we have four variations. I think they all look quite good. I'm going to call a win for all four of these. This shows the power of the free plan. Let's have a look at the best one here. And we had this one here. And if you recall the pirate ship that we saw before, this looks pretty darn close. So if you didn't get to go out on the pirate ship at Mooney's Bay before it shut down for the summer, this is your chance, Ideogram, get your selfie here. Let's do a comparison of the two photographs side by side. And I would say it did an excellent job here. We have the turkey on the left over there and the new guy on the right. He is not a real person, by the way, so I didn't blur his face. He's an AI actor, just for this purpose here. But the Ideogram generated image even added the pirate flag better than we had before. You might have seen it in our text. And I will declare this one a very clear win because I've tried a lot of AI things, much more than perchance, and getting this much accuracy, I would call it pretty well 4 out of 4. This is a cool program. So we'll do a little bit more here. I'll show you. I threw in some stuff here about we asked for some try generating pictures of waterfalls now.
Okay, Bob, just before you move on, there's a question from Bob Walker if this software can be used to edit existing pictures. So, for example, could you change the eyes from green to blue?
You could using the text here, yes, with your text. You could put your text in here. You could put I could have asked for a pirate with no beard. We can go back in there and remix or re-edit our existing prompt in Ideogram. So I could go back into the same picture of the pirate on the right and ask for a clean shaven pirate. And I believe that would nail it. That would do it, yes. It's a manual task, and that would certainly do it. It's possible. It's very accurate. It'll do what it's told. And the magic prompt is a toggle switch. You can force it to do what you said exactly, or you can just do what it's told. So those two things are a little bit different. I've only had it now for less than 10 days. And my most every day my credits have burned out, but it's definitely good fun.
Okay, so basically if you want to change the image, you give it a whole new description. It's not like a follow-up question in a chatbot.
No, you can go back in and re-edit your previous one. You can see all your previous ones you've done before. So I could go back into that same text and ask for, instead of a purple, I call it a bandana, I could ask for a green one, and it would come out green. I'm very confident about that.
Okay, so back to waterfalls.
Yeah, nothing spectacular here. You think you get the most of the idea here. I asked for a picture of four waterfalls, or one waterfall, I'm sorry. I wanted several waterfalls in the same picture, and it nailed it here. And then finally, I have one more for you here. We have the nice little picture of the waterfall. And I would say that all of these come out to be a win. So I hope you're ready for your own Audiogram adventure. So that's all I have for here. Oh, but there is one more thing I wanted to share with you guys before I leave here. Hope I can find it. Oh, yes. I know you've all been wanting to hear about this. Been a lot of questions over this. Is everybody here aware of the hot air balloon? Well, yes, the Ottawa PC Users Group recently purchased a hot air balloon. If you were in Ottawa on the weekend, you may have seen it flying over the city. There are photographs on the website now, thanks to Bridget. If you haven't gone to the website, we'll show you a few shots here right now tonight. And here we go. Here we have, yes, and the crowds on Parliament Hill were all lined up as it came in for a landing here. We have the lettering on the balloon. It's absolutely perfect. Came out fantastic. Our treasurer bought this and nailed it. And we have a little more shot here, too. We have one more shot, I believe, here also. Here we go. Yes, this is it's flying over the Rideau River, Riverside Drive. This is over Riverside Drive. Another spectacular photograph. The crowd's, anyway. And then we have one more again here. Oh, we have two balloons. I'm sorry. This is the yellow one flying over the Rideau River. Yes. Another spectacular sight. The crowds were going crazy. And then we have, oh, yes, there's another one, too, over the Rideau River. We filled the city with balloons on the weekend. And, I'm sorry to inform you folks, the Ottawa PC Users Group does not have a hot air balloon quite yet. But I wanted a chance to show you that Ideogram has the ability to put accurate lettering in your text. And we have the last thing I'll show you here is the prompt of this. We asked for a very colorful hot air balloon displaying large red letters, OPCUG. The balloon is floating over the city of Ottawa in Canada on a sunny day, and the sky is blue. That was all we used to generate this photograph, and those photographs came up. And once again, this software is the best I've ever seen for graphic imaging, and it's free. So give it a try. You get 10 images per day. They say more, but it's great fun. You'll enjoy it. And thank you, everybody.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. But Karen has a question. She says, could I ask it to take a picture of me and insert it into a location? And secondly, does it do videos?
It does not do videos, to my knowledge. It does not take pictures at all. I have one more thing coming up next week that might help a little bit with that. But this is powerful stuff. I might try to embed something else into this program. I'm working on that. It's not quite finished yet. But it gives you what you ask for. And you get, it says 40 a day. You won't get 40. you'll get a good solid 10 or 12, and you get four at once, so don't count them. But you go in every day, have your fun, you burn up your credits, you come back tomorrow, and they're all reset. And we've got power user power here. For me, it's really fast. I mean, the 10 seconds on my computer here, it's the best I've ever seen. And beyond from that, they say it's comparable to a Midjourney or something. I don't know what Midjourney is. I've never tried that. I didn't get into that one for free. But I still use Perchance because it's totally free, but it's more random. This one, you get what you ask for. That balloon, I did not try any other, even the tractor one and the dogs. Those were all first time rounds. There was no trial runs on those. I gave you the first ones out of the box. And I've only been on this now for a little bit. I'm doing more things too. So I'll be a pro at this soon. Maybe you will too. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Don't forget to check the chat window because there's tons of comments in there. People really like your presentation.
Oh, by the way, I have one of those other phones. It's not an Android. I put the app on my phone, and it's an iPhone, and I signed in with Google again on my phone. I can see all the photographs I generated on my PC, on my phone, in my history on the app. Hot air windbags here, yep.
Don't know who he's talking about there, Bob.
Oh, sorry. Now, let's turn it over to Alan now. Thank you, Alan.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to go to a share that came in from B just this afternoon. She received an email saying that she'd been added to a Google group. And if you look at the Google group, it's the Cash Party Casino Slot Game, which I'm sure B wanted to be a member of their Golden Club. So clearly this, B recognizes this as a scam. And Bob's favorite AI chatbot, Perplexity, says, Google Groups is being exploited by scammers. They're creating fake groups. And sometimes they pose as legitimate companies. And they add people just at random without obtaining permission. So the suggestion is don't click on links and don't call phone numbers that come in these scam emails. And also check your Google Groups membership and see if you have actually been signed up for anything. And if you have, then leave that group. And then the second thing it says is that you can maybe adjust some settings and that will stop people adding you without permission. And so it's basically you sign into Google Groups, go to settings and global settings, and then there are a couple of options there. Add me to their group, invite me to their groups, and you can uncheck those and then save the changes, and hopefully that will stop you being added to various groups. But you can also report these scam-type things, either Google group things or just scam emails that you get with Gmail addresses. You can report them to Google, and if you check this link here, it's got all the information about both the Google group scam and how to contact Google support. And Eldon's thinking that they do the same thing with Hotmail and Yahoo and all the other email groups. And I think that's true. I've seen it on WhatsApp being added to groups on WhatsApp, which weren't required. The nice thing about WhatsApp is you can tell it, there's a setting which says only allow people in my contacts list to add me to groups. So that stops anybody who you don't know, that stops them adding you to a group nefariously. So there are some ways around it, I guess. Okay, next up. I said in the preliminary comments that we sent out that there were some questions we had answers to and some questions we didn't have answers to. And this was the one that, you know, initially I didn't have an answer to, but subsequently we sorted it out. So the question came in from a member that the background colors in in Office products like Word and Excel, but also in Windows Explorer. The background colors are changing and also moving around. And she wanted to know if this was a Microsoft feature, a new one, or is it a problem with her laptop, which is basically new, because the colors and especially the movement is fairly distracting. And this is a screenshot, and I don't know if it's obvious, but there's kind of a blue color up here and a tan color here, and it's kind of mottled all the way in the window. It's also on the header here. So that's the kind of issue, that there's this background color basically everywhere. So she went to Google like a good computer user and found this link on the Microsoft support site that changed the look and feel of Microsoft 365. And it suggested going to options in general. And then you can see that the Office background is set as clouds and the Office theme is set to use the system setting. And you notice over here, you can also tell it to never change the page color of the document that you're working on. Now, the interesting thing is she said it's set to clouds, but she didn't choose clouds. And in fact, she didn't even know that these options existed. And the support page that she went to says you can change the look and feel by selecting a new Office theme. Interestingly, it talks about Office themes, but it doesn't talk about backgrounds. And it seems to be backgrounds which are the problem. Anyway, sure enough, go to File Options General and then pick Office theme and choose the option. And the default theme is use the system settings, which is how you set Windows to look. And she tried changing this to no background and rebooted the computer, but it didn't change anything. And if you do go to Office and General and Options, and here are the choices for Office background, and you can see a whole bunch of things, including clouds here, but there's also lunchbox and straws and tree rings. And then the themes use the system setting, but you can also have gray, black, white, or something called colorful. Interestingly enough, I tried some of these things on my version of Office 365. So here at the top is the clouds background and using the system setting. And I don't know about you, but I don't see any evidence of any clouds anywhere. If I change the background to no background, and I change the Office theme to colorful, the one thing I do notice is the changes of the color of the header suddenly becomes blue instead of, a light gray, I guess, up there. So the Office theme does do something. What the background is doing, we're not sure. And it's pretty difficult to find out what this background should do, but eventually I tracked down a YouTube video. And this guy tells you how to change the theme and how to change the background. And this is a very poor resolution screenshot. But you can see that there's this kind of mottled effect here, which is the cloud background, which is in the top right-hand corner of the ribbon for, this is probably Microsoft Word. So why you would want to have that as a feature, or a background, I have no idea, but that's what it's supposed to look like. And sure enough, when I played around with this thing, on my account page, so if you go to the account page on the Word menu, then I set the background to be what they call circuit. So it's some kind of printed circuit type thing. And again, you can see it's in this top right-hand corner of the account page. But when I go to the edit window and look at my document, then there's no sign of it. So that's, I guess, why I couldn't find it earlier. And if I look at all these different themes, maybe this is the circuit. So maybe there's some circuit in the dark gray there, but I can't really see it. I can just see it here in the black background. I can definitely see it in the white background, and I can see it in the system setting, which I think is just the white background. And I can just about see it in the colorful background when the header changes to blue. So, as far as I can tell, if you change the background, it only affects that top right-hand corner of the account window. It doesn't seem to do anything to the actual document page. So, I asked the member to try changing the page color. So, if you go to the Design tab in Word and change page color to white, and you can see basically what happens is the background of this central window, which is the page that's being worked on, has changed to white, but that colored background in the borders of the window and also in the header is still there. So it's nothing to do with the page color, and it doesn't seem to be anything to do with the with Word. And because you notice here, it's in these border areas, and also in the header. So here's my my version of Word again, and now I've changed back to clouds. And sure enough, on the account page, this feature only displays in the top right hand corner. But if I go to the edit window, then I don't see it. There's no clouds here anymore. And it also isn't showing up in the Windows borders. So I went back to her original email and thinking about what is going on here. And two things kind of struck me what she said. One, that the background is not static. The colors are moving around. And a follow-up message, she says, it moves around like the colors on a lava lamp. So the background isn't a static image like the circuit, for example. It's actually some kind of colored background which is moving. And then this multicolored kind of diffuse background image, it isn't one of those backgrounds. It isn't clouds. It isn't circuitry. It's not school supplies. It's something else. So it strikes me that it's actually something to do with Windows rather than something to do with Microsoft Office. And then eventually I went back to that first link that she'd found, changing the look and feel of Microsoft 365, and buried in the text, it's like, I don't know, five pages of text or something, five screens of text anyway. There's this notification type window, and you notice it says, you may notice the color hue in the background of your 365 app. This effect is called Mica, and it's your desktop background showing through the background of Word, Excel, etc. And if you want to disable that, then you have to go to Windows Settings, navigate to Personalization, Colors, and Transparency Effects. So that's where this background is showing up. So we did actually find that that problem in the end. Okay, so we've got about 10 minutes to go. I don't think we have any new questions, Bob, in the chat. Didn't see anything. Okay, I think I will skip to this next topic. Maybe. Not going to. What's going on? Why can't I do it? Oh, thank you. There we go. Oh, that's not right. That's not 93. Sorry about this, folks. Technical hitch. There we go. 93. Right. So this is a question that came in from me. I got tired of calling up Windows Explorer and looking at this folder, which has got a whole bunch of graphics, which I use typically in these PowerPoint slides. So this is Windows 10 File Explorer. And you'll notice that these are all image files. It's displaying thumbnails for JPEGs, this one and this one. It's displaying a thumbnail for a GIF file. But all these other files are PNGs. And all I'm getting is some kind of icon. I can't see what the image is. So that's kind of annoying because I'd like to know what the, I mean, I've got the description there, I kind of know what it is, but it's much easier if you can see what it is. So I asked Chris, what do you see on your desktop and how do I fix this problem? So he sent me this screenshot of his computer. And you notice there's lots of different image types there. There's an SVG image up in the top here. There's a WMF image there. There's a BMP image here. There's JPEG. But you notice down here, there's also a PNG. And in his case, the PNG, in fact, all of these image types, they're all showing a thumbnail, including the PNG, which I wasn't seeing. So Bob Harris says, always ask Perplexity how to do stuff. So I said, how do I make File Explorer display thumbnails for PNG files? And it suggested a bunch of things. And it said, check the File Explorer settings, clear the cache, and restore the options to default, and adjust the visual effects settings. So go to View, Advanced System Settings, go to Settings, Visual Effects, Show, and then under Advanced Settings, always show icons, never thumbnails. Well, you know, here it had show the thumbnails instead of icons, which is what I really wanted. This is kind of reverse in my version of Windows. Always show icons, never thumbnails. Well, I don't want to enable that because then I'd always get icons for everything. But it is deactivated, and I'm still not getting thumbnails for PNG files. But those are the first four suggestions. There's a fifth suggestion, and this is the one that worked. And this requires editing the registry. But the edit is really, really simple. So you basically call up regedit and navigate to this H key class as root, and then you'll find there's a bunch of keys for the different file types. So you find the one that's for .png files, you right-click on that key, and there might be three subkeys involved as well, but you right-click on the main key and select delete. And then the weird thing is, after deleting, you right-click on any PNG file, select Open With, and choose Photos, which is the Windows app, and say, always use this app. And that, he says, that should restore the thumbnail previews in File Explorer. And sure enough, it does, because once I do all that, then you can see that my JPEGs and my GIFs have got the thumbnails, but now so do all my PNG files. So now I'm a happy camper because I know how to establish those thumbnails for PNG files. And the other interesting thing is I don't use Photos for browsing images. I use a third-party app called Fastone Image Viewer because it gives me a lot of flexibility in terms of how I view the files and how to rename them. I can do batch renaming. I can do batch resizing. It's a very powerful digital image manager. When I changed the default for opening image files back to Fastone Image Viewer, the PNG icons remain in File Explorer. So you may have to choose Photos once, but you can actually reset it. So that's actually really, really useful. Okay, so we're into the last 10. I didn't see any new questions pop up, but we'll give you the option here to ask any new questions or comments or shares or whatever you'd like to. So I notice there's a question here from Marvo. Do we have any Apple people? Well, there are some Apple people, even though we're an IBM PC user group. I just bought a new iPad, and after setting it up, I tried to download an app. and it tells me that the Apple account has not yet been used in the iTunes store. And I never needed to access iTunes to download stuff on the store from the store on previous products. So does anybody know what's going on? Now, not being an Apple user, I have no idea. So anybody who knows about Apple and the Apple Store, this is your question to answer. Anybody got an idea on that one? You can unmute your microphone. Stuart's throwing his hands up, not putting his hand up, but throwing his hands up. You have an iPod, Stu, you should know the answer to this. Well, if you have an answer, think about it and send us an email and we'll pass the information along or do a follow-up next week.
I have an iPad and an iPhone, and your iTunes and the iCloud are all the same thing. You need to have that password quite often. I think you need that password, and they potentially charge you. Some of the apps on the iTunes store cost money, so you have to have an account set up to download anything from there, even if it's free. So you'll need your Apple sign-in in the iTunes store, whether you're paying for it or not. You just can't go and grab it. It might be free, yeah.
Right. That makes sense. And that's exactly what's happening, right? The Apple account hasn't been used in the iTunes store, so...
But the thing is, I'm downloading an app from the Apple Store, not the iTunes stuff. I'm trying not to deal with the iTunes whatsoever. I said I had an iPhone and I have another iPad, and I said I never had to go to the iTunes for whatever when I was downloading something that was specifically at the Apple Store, not the iTunes Store.
Yeah. Okay. Any thoughts on that, Bob?
Not so much. I think it's the same password, though. I don't need mine too often, but you do have to use that one. So, I pay for storage also, a little bit extra storage. And I pay for it with Apple cards to keep it bumped up ahead. They have a credit card of mine on file, but I don't pay much. But
he has an Apple account, so he must have a user ID and a password. It just says it hasn't been used in the iTunes store.
I think go to the iTunes store and sign in once, and then you're good to go.
But imagine, avoid it for 10 years. I don't see how come it needs it now.
Did you buy many apps for your stuff?
I haven't bought one thing yet. I just downloaded this free stuff. And I haven't gone to the iTunes whatsoever. I just deal with the Apple Store. Right now I was trying to do like a speed test. And I was trying to download that app, and because at one point it talks something about the media, but I don't see how, well, other than bandwidth for the speed test, I don't see what the media has to do with the Apple Store.
Have you tried putting that error message into Google search and seeing if other people are having the problems and whether anybody has a fix?
Actually, no, I haven't, only because I only encountered that very recently. I just thought I'd throw it out with you guys, see if you guys had a better thing. Because I find sometimes with the Google or any of these other stuff, it doesn't always seem to be – I'm not as successful in a lot of my searches, even though I try to put fairly specific stuff.
Have you ever tried Perplexity AI? Because that can be very specific and very helpful.
But not yet. Honestly, like I said, it's just been very recent, so.
Yeah. Well, that's what I would suggest. Again, I'm not an Apple user, so I can't help you, but I would suggest searching and see if anybody has the issue.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Alan, it's Karen. I'm just wondering about going back to your File Explorer. Does the same registry fix apply to the preview pane? Because today I was trying to use my publisher, and it stopped showing me previews in the preview pane. And I just wondered if this same fix would do the same thing for thumbnails as it does for the preview pane.
Well, I don't know. This is very specific to the registry key for PNG files. So you'd have to find a fix specific to your particular issue.
But couldn't I go into the registry for a .pub file and do the same?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, the problem is if you delete it, is anything useful in there? I don't know.
Okay, got it. Thanks.
If you have a backup of your system, you can always do it and then restore the backup if it's a huge problem. Okay, well, let's move along here. And I'll just remind you that next week is our regular monthly meeting. And I'm going to be talking about building websites without needing any HTML coding. So if you're interested in building a website, you don't know anything about HTML, this is one way to do it. And you also don't have to find a host for your website. It's an all-in-one package. So that will be next week, September the 11th. And because of that, we will not have a Q&A. We don't have Q&As on regular meeting nights. So next week will be the monthly meeting. The next Q&A will be in 2 weeks on September the 18th. So you have lots of time to think about all the problems that we haven't fixed tonight, ask some new questions, and try things out, and then give us a share in much the same way that Bob did earlier. So thanks to everybody for sending in your questions. Thanks to Bob especially for giving that super presentation on image generation. And that's it for me, and we'll see you all next week.
We do have one thing from Elizabeth in the chat here that's nicely addressed the Apple ID store issue, I think, here. I think okay. Elizabeth has nailed it. I haven't read the whole. It's quite a sizable, good content here. And
okay, so she's saying that the Apple ID not being used in the iTunes store usually occurs when you're trying to download that for the first time using a new Apple ID. It's not an error, but rather a prompt to set up your Apple ID for the App Store. To resolve this issue, you'll need to complete the initial setup process for the Apple ID. Here's how to do it. Open settings, yada, yada, yada. So all that information, quite a long thing here. All that information will be in the chat file, which will be posted to the website probably later tonight. So Marvo, check the website and you'll find the information in the chat window. Or alternatively, you can actually save the chat yourself locally. And I forget how you do that. You right click on something? No, I don't remember. It's one of those buttons down there, I think. Anyway, it's in the chat and it will be on the website.
I could add one more thing to that. I have my credit card on file with that, and I'm okay with that. If you don't want to use your credit card into your phone because you don't buy any apps, go to, the food store or whatever and get a little Apple card. You scratch off the code, take your phone to, it could be a $10 card, and you put that onto your Apple account, the $10 card. Your $10 credit will sit there, and I think that might get you enough. Like your credit balance on there now, you don't need a credit card, so that might be enough to get you going.
Okay, lots of ideas there, something to try. Okay, so we'll see everybody next week.
Thank you. All good job, Alan. Thank you.